And local sports right now means we're getting ready for the Super Bowl between San Francisco 49ers and whoever.
Jay must be back. Jay must be back.
Man, don't be trying to spot up on me now, brother.
Jay been quiet all afternoon. So he come back in. He's all bang, bang, Niner gang. Oh, I knew it. Jay must be back.
He's trying to bask in the glory of Miami, man.
Oh, man. You're killing me, dude. I tell you what, I got to get out of this ballroom, man. I might have to take a segment off or something, dude. I feel like I'm trapped up in here. Ain't no windows. The lighting is awful. This is brutal right now.
Well, I know you don't want to leave this hour because coming up this hour, we're going to talk about what Jason Kidd said about Luka, comparing Luka to MJ and Kobe and those guys. So I know you want to be participating in that conversation. Yeah, but for now, yes, Dan Campbell and the Super Bowl. Dan Campbell, and you were pretty tough on Coach Campbell, I thought, yesterday, Kyle. Mm-hmm. You thought he kind of cost the Lions a ball game, huh?
Yeah, I think so. And that's the thing. As a coach, I understand you want to be true to who you are. This is what we do. But you have to be the adult in the room. You have to be the level-headed person in the room. And if you can't, there were several key plays, field goal decisions that, in my opinion, cost them the game or at least gave momentum to the 49ers team. And, you know, you got to be better than that as the head coach.
Yeah, you know who agreed with you today? He did a lot of media today. The second greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady, agreed with you. He said, yeah, I would have kicked the field goals there. But anyway, be that as it may, Joe Montana is the greatest quarterback of all time, of course. But all kidding aside, Dan Campbell today admitted that he made a mistake, but he didn't admit he made a mistake by kicking the field goal at the end of the first half or deciding to go for it twice in the second half instead of kicking a field goal. He said the mistake he made was running a running play on third and goal when they were trying to score real quick and then get the ball back. Dan Campbell said, yeah, because they ran the ball and then they got stopped and then the clock is running. Dan Campbell said, the easy thing to do is throw it. Probably should have been the right thing, but for me, I wanted to run it. I thought we would just pop it. We just had run the 2-minute offense all the way down the field, throwing the football. They were in a 4-down front. I believe we'd walk right in and we just missed a block. So then, I've got to use a timeout. Hindsight, throw it 4 times. But I believed in that moment it was going to be a walk and run. It didn't work out, so I gambled and lost, end quote. Remember, that game, the 49ers milked that clock right down to the last play of the game, taking a penalty and then Brock Purdy backing up to expend the final second. So those were crucial seconds for the Lions in terms of what proved to be their inability to get the ball back at all after that touchdown.
Yeah, and, you know, that's like, the one thing that I agree with Dan Campbell, that play, because they were talking about it on the broadcast too. They're like, nah, you don't run it here because what if you get stopped and then you got to hustle back to the line and everything like that. And so he just made so many questionable decisions when the pressure, you know, mounted the most. And that's why the great quarterbacks and the great coaches are great, that in the moments of tightness, when things get tense, you know, they usually make the right call. And Dan Campbell, you know, there are some people saying he should be fired for his play calling in that game, his decision-making in that game. I'm not one of them, because if you fire him, then who you got? Mm-hmm. You know, Dan Campbell is your culture. Like, if you get rid of him, who are you going to bring in to replace that and have a similar culture? And so, but this should be a learning lesson. This should be a lesson for him, something he takes away and learns from and comes back better next year. Because I don't know, if you're a player in that locker room, you know, he's your coach, you know, you live and die with him, you ride or die. But man, it's going to be an off season of what ifs for the Detroit Lions.
I can't believe that people would say should be fired. I've never been the biggest fan of him there, you know, with all the "we're going to bite your kneecaps off" stuff. But obviously it worked. You have to give him some credit. And that was, you know, you got to, that's Campbell being Campbell. You know, there's upside and downside. By the way, not to get too wonky, but some are suggesting that even though they ran the ball there, they still should not have taken the timeout, that they should have hurried up to the line of scrimmage, run the next play, and kept that timeout for when they needed it. But either way, it was a mistake to run the ball. Now, how about this? Kyle Shanahan was asked yesterday if there's an advantage to having a couple of gut check games. You know, the past two weekends have been so tough for the Niners. They've underperformed in the first half. He says, yeah. He says, I always think when you go through stuff like this, it hardens you and prepares you for any situation. Are you buying that? I mean, obviously, what's a coach going to say? But do you think that the 49ers benefit from the last two wins being as close and as difficult for them as they were?
I don't know if you can see me on a YouTube chat right now, but that's a zero zilch nada. Because what Kyle Shanahan sounds like is me during the regular season with my Philadelphia Eagles. When I'm like, hey, as long as you get the win, you know, it's hardening you. You know, every game's not going to be a blowout. You know, you need these kind of, you know, if I'm a Niners fan, Jay Johnson, if I'm a Niners fan, Whitey, I would be concerned about this defense, the defensive line specifically.
If you're a Niners fan,
attack specifically.
If you're a Niners fan, Jay is Taylor Swift, by the way, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Jay knows he's sweating bullets back there worrying about this defense because the defense ain't all it's been cracked up to be. You know, this is one of the highest paid defenses out there, and they just aren't getting it done. Like, they made Jared Goff in that first quarter, and they let Montgomery look like, you know, Wilbert Montgomery from the Eagles back in the day, the way they were dicing good up pull. That defensive line. And so I would be a little concerned about the defense right now.
They did play well in the second half, and they had to, because that was a thing at halftime. I thought, you know, I was telling this to the High Flyer yesterday. To me, football is more like basketball than it ever used to be. They're not the same, I know, but it's more like basketball than it used to be. It's more up and down, higher scoring. And so, you know, it's like you got to score and you got to get stops. You know, it's like basketball. And I thought, well, the 49ers cannot get any stops at halftime. How can you win when you're down 17 and you cannot get stops? But somehow they figured it out. It's interesting. Tim Kawakami today wrote that Fred Warner might have had as much to do with that as Steve Wilks. I don't know. But there you go. The defense, you have to admit. My point is, you have to admit the defense did play well in the second half. Right? Drapes.
Really? They did.
Yeah.
But I
they
will.
They played okay.
Yeah. But let me say this. I think, and I can't be, you know, I can't just be 49er Homer fan.
Why
the
not?
Defense looks absolutely horrendous. They really do.
Yeah.
And it's the front line. And what you're saying, Drapes, and Simone behind my shoulder was saying that as you were saying that at the same time, one of my things is you have Javon Hargrave, who you paid $98 million to. You have Eric Armstead, who's sitting on $60-70 million. You have Nick Bosa. You have Chase Young, of course, who's supposed to be someone. And maybe you got him on the fly. You have Randy Gregory. Like, there's guys that we have seen rotated throughout this year, and all we've heard from Steve Wilks and the defensive line coach is we're saving them for when it happens, for when we need them. Well, there was no greater time than when Detroit was on the goal line two or three times and I was looking and Javon Hargrave wasn't in the game and Eric Armstead on third and short wasn't in the game. I don't know what we're saving these guys for. Why are we paying these guys $200 million collectively if they're not even in the game, let alone trying to stop someone? And I think Drapes, you're 100% correct where one or two mistakes against Pat Mahomes, as much as I hate to say it because I'm really not a fan of Pat Mahomes, is a difference. Like it'll move.
Right.
And we've seen it happen.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it happen.
Yeah,
where you're
yep.
up 10 and now you're down by 11 just that quick.
Jet chip wasp.
Absolutely. And so I agree with you, Drapes. I mean, I would be kidding you if I'm not sitting here saying I am worried about the defensive line, no pressure. I'm not worried about the linebackers, and I'm not so much as worried about the defensive backs, and I know a lot of people picking on Ambry Thomas right now, but I think this team starts with the defensive line. It ends, you know, starts and ends with them, and so I'm a little worried, brother. You got me? I got to be real here.
Finally, man, it took you what? Yesterday and most of today?
Well, I was still
finally.
Celebrating yesterday.
Yeah.
I still have my pineapple.
Victory Monday.
My mocktails, you know?
Yeah, we'll look at some numbers that underscore why a lot of 49er fans are concerned about the rushing defense. But as far as what Shanahan said, quote, you want to be able to go through tons of games and be able to win games any way possible. I always feel you're capable of winning a game any way possible, but it just hasn't gone that way this year totally. We've been able to win a bunch of games pretty easily where that fourth quarter isn't so stressful. The ones that we lost, usually you could see that happening earlier before that game. So to get in some games like this, it's just good experience for our players to go through it and to make sure to see how important it is to go through all four quarters, win or lose, that you're never out of it, end quote. If there is one bit, and I agree with you, Kyle, a lot of this is coach speak. You know, what's the coach going to say? But I do think, you know, there's a lot of talk from a lot of people that the 49ers can't come from behind. Well, at least they've done that now twice in big games. There's a very good chance you'll have to do that against the Chiefs. And at least they know that, well, it can be done because we just did it twice.
Yes, and you're right. They did it. They've proven it. You know, I'm not going to take away a whole lot of credit, but I will say, look at the two quarterbacks that they did it against. And you know, I think when you look at Kansas City, Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes, they won't beat themselves. They won't crap the bed. And so you look at the comeback win against the Detroit Lions. I maintain, and I've said it before, San Fran marches down the field in the third quarter to start after the half. They kick the field goal. Detroit comes right back, kick the field goal to make it a 27-10 game, three-score game. And so I think what you saw happen this past weekend is Dan Campbell give way too much credit to this 49ers offense. Like, he felt like he said 30. No, he felt like he had to score 40 the way he was coaching. And so I don't know if Andy Reid and them are going to, you know, come out like that this week. Sure, it helps. But you know how it is in sports, Whitey. I said this earlier. You know, I thought the same thing about my Eagles. You just never know. You just never know.
We tried to tell you about your Eagles, but you wouldn't
listen. I know. I wouldn't listen. I was hard-headed. I was stubborn.
But, you know, the thing about Dan Campbell, you know this about sports, too. Let's say they had gone for that field goal, the one that you're talking about. And I agree with you, but let's say they tried for the field goal and missed it. And then the 49ers, oh, we got momentum. And people would be saying, Dan Campbell always goes for it. Why didn't he go for it? So you just never know.
That's can't win for losing, though, as a head coach. Why do you know that?
Right. Yeah. I think the other one where they could have tied the game, to me, that was the one, as I said yesterday. When you could tie the game and you don't kick it, that was the one that I thought, I don't think he knows where he is. So that was a strange bet. But when we come right back, and we've been talking about this, if the 49ers don't fix this, they are in super trouble. Some numbers for you next year with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Drive Guys with you. You know, anytime somebody's named an all-star, he was an all-star, she was an all-star, that's great, or all-pro. The thing, Kyle Draper, that I think we got to be wary of is anytime you hear somebody was a Pro Bowl this or a Pro Bowl that, because today, Gardner Minshew was named one of the AFC's three Pro Bowl quarterbacks. So,
what?
Yeah, the six Pro Bowl quarterbacks now. Which six quarterbacks are in the Pro Bowl? You think, oh, man, these guys are great, right? The six Pro Bowl quarterbacks are Gardner Minshew, C.J. Stroud, Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts, Geno Smith, and Baker Mayfield. So only Tua remains among the six who were initially named Pro Bowlers. Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Brock Purdy, Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford were all named Pro Bowlers when the rosters were announced, but none of them are going to be there Sunday, you know, when we're playing, or I just don't want to do it. So Gardner Minshew's a Pro Bowl quarterback. Good for him. How about that?
Man, hopefully it's not tied to your contract in the NFL, right? I mean, that's a joke.
Yes.
You know, Gardner Minshew as a all pro, like a Pro Bowler.
Pro Bowl,
just, come on. What are we doing in NFL?
Yeah.
This is terrible. Like, let me look at his numbers just to make sure I'm not off base
I don't think they were terrible, and they almost made the playoffs. But, you know, Pro Bowl, you'd think they'd be like, whoa, you got to be good to be in the Pro Bowl.
Wow. He was 17th in the NFL in total yards. Let me look at the rating, because obviously he didn't play the entire season. Whoa. Hold on here.
Yeah.
You know it's bad when you got to start scrolling down. Oh, my gosh. He was 25th in the NFL in quarterback rating. Okay. Now, some guys started five games, six games, eight games, something like that. But my gosh, Gardner Minshew, a Pro Bowler?
It's not his fault. You know, they asked him.
That's
like,
worse
okay.
than the yeah. Right, of course. Good for him, but whew,
yeah,
that's terrible.
That's why anytime we're
if
talking
the players
about
players don't take it seriously, why should we? I mean,
yeah, yeah.
That's a bad look for the NFL.
Yeah, anytime you're talking about a quarterback, and well, he was made the Pro Bowl. It's like, nah, I don't. That doesn't count. But as far as the Super Bowl goes, here's a concern for 49ers fans. I think, according to the Ringer, there's only three teams that allowed a positive estimated points over average on runs up the middle this year. So runs up the middle. Only three teams allowed positive numbers this year. The New York Giants, who are terrible. The Carolina Panthers, who are awful. And the 49ers. The 49ers, one of three teams that allowed the positive yardage up the middle. And you've got, this week, they're going up against Isaiah Pacheco. He averages more than 3 yards per rush after contact. So he's a beast between the tackles. So this is that's, I think, job one for the 49ers to get cleaned up before the Super Bowl.
Well, tackling's been an issue for this team for most of the season. I mean, this is – you're right about that. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to. When you look at the strength of the 49ers, and I'm talking about their key skill position players, Deebo Samuel and CMC, their ability to not only inflict punishment but also to get yards after the contact is huge. And so it may be what this game comes down to. You know, if you don't stop Isaiah Pacheco up the middle, you know, then that opens up Patrick Mahomes and it just snowballs. And I think it's the same for the Chiefs. Like, you know, I still maintain for Kansas City, stopping CMC has to be at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. And those guys, Pacheco and CMC, they deliver punishment and the yards after the contact are huge for them.
It was so discouraging during the Lions game. And I know the 49ers came back. It was tremendous. But in that first half, 3rd and 12, and the Lions ran the ball, and they picked up the first down. Remember that wide run? It's like, oh, my goodness, they picked up a 3rd and 18. It just felt like there's just, wow, if you cannot stop the other team. And I don't know. I'd love to know in more detail what adjustments the 49ers made. I think they went away from zone and went to more man. But it was night and day because in the first half, it was like they didn't have enough guys on defense. That's why I thought you could argue that Campbell probably should have gone for it at the end of the half rather than kick the field goal. They got the points all good, but the 49ers couldn't stop them. So how are they going to stop Patrick Mahomes? I don't know, but they still have some time to figure that out, Drapes. And I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Of course they will. They always do, right? You know, the Niners always figure it out. And we're going to have some NFL guests, obviously, throughout the week and leading up to Super Bowl week, guys that know it a little better than us, that can break down the film and tell us what it is that the Niners are doing right or wrong or what adjustments they could make. But, you know, the NFL is all about the line of scrimmage and who owns that. And I think it may come down to Pacheco versus CMC. You know, Christian McCaffrey, can I at least give him his praises? I do it every time, every show we have. I'm impressed with him more and more. It's not just his ability, you know, yards after contact. Like, he runs hard. He reminds me, if I'm going to say this correctly, he's the DeMontis Sabonis of the NFL because he plays hard every single time he touches the ball. It's you can feel him and feel the punishment that he's delivering
relentless.
Out there.
Yeah.
Relentless, right? He is just – I mean, we knew he was good before he got here. I didn't know he was this good. I mean, he has been phenomenal.
That's a really interesting point. So let me ask you, in your learned opinion, who is the Brock Purdy of the NBA? What do you got? You think?
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a great one. It would be somebody in the G League, probably. That
and don't just immediately start hating all of a sudden because we know how you get when you say Brock Purdy.
Yeah. See, I know. Your friend Isaiah Thomas just tweeted something about my brother, my Mr. Irrelevant brother, way to go. So I mean, there's certainly some similarities there.
Yeah, you're right. IT. And you know what? It's interesting. I was going to remember I started off the football season saying Jeremy Lin. Remember, he was Lin Sanity. But, you know, Isaiah Thomas could be an accurate comparison, too. coming off, you know, Mr. Relevant, last pick in the draft.
Yeah.
IT, if I'm correct, a two-time All-Star, you know, really put up some numbers. And, you know, it, obviously his career was short-lived. But when you look at fitting into the system, if you will, in Boston and how they tailored it for him, some say Brock Purdy is a system quarterback. I'm not saying that. I'm not going that far. But, you know, the ideal situation. And so, yeah, maybe it's Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, and you never gave him his due either, did you? And that's why he won't come on the show, right? So it's very similar.
AJ, call IT up and three-way him in for me so I can holler at him, because he's not accepting my calls or text or anything like that. It's a misunderstanding. I stuck up for Isaiah Thomas when he had his hip injury.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah, I don't know. I just know that Jay can't get him on, and I know you said that.
Jay, you know what? I'm about to hit him up. You got me angry, Whitey. I'm chilling here in this ballroom, just relaxing.
I got you angry.
And
did you re-up? No, did you re-up on the pina colada?
No, man, the break wasn't long enough at the 412
mark. Well, I can make one. Yeah, look, I hold the power. Just let me know how long you need, and I need to see the re-up for Drapes.
I'm going to go see my guy Jose out there at the pool, and he'll mix me up one. Look, dude, this thing is dried out on me now.
Hey, you're not, like, that's Sahara Desert. You're not even in Miami no more.
Right. Exactly. So, dude, I'm serious about Isaiah Thomas, though. We need to three-way him in, and if he's really salty, I need to have some words with him.
I don't know, Jay.
What you want me to text him, or what are we saying here?
Text him? Call him? Gotcha. Three-way, something like that, you know, give me something, you know what I mean? Like FaceTime, Zoom call, whatever you want to do, big fella.
Send a bird right? Message, smoke signals, you bought that life right now, okay?
Exactly. You know what I'm going to do, like we did back in elementary school? Are you mad at me? Yes or no? Circle one.
Yeah, you can get him some of those candy hearts for Valentine's Day maybe, too.
Right?
Yeah.
I may have to. I love you, Isaiah. Man, that's messed up, dude.
By the way, Tim
starting
says,
stuff, man. Yeah. I've noticed Whitey today. He's been percolating some things today. I like where you're going.
Yeah.
Tim on the text line says, Keegan Murray would be Brock Purdy in the NBA due to second season uprising trending upward. But Keegan was a seventh pick. I know where you're going, Tim.
Draymond.
Yeah.
How about Draymond?
How about that?
What is Tim? You know, no, I'm not going to do that to him. Go ahead, man. I'm not going to.
Draymond? Draymond was a second-round guy.
I'm not going to do that to our boy, Tim. Tim blowing up the text chain. That's because we ain't taking his phone calls anymore. That's why he's trying to get in where he can fit in on the text line. Because we ain't taking his phone calls anymore.
It's a veteran play right there. When we come back,
right?
Jason Kidd has high praise for Luka, as in he must be high to say that. That is next here with the Drive Guys on Sackdowns. We want headlines. You got them. Kings won last night. 49ers go to the Super Bowl. Kyle Draper is in Miami getting ready for the Kings and the Heat. Take us behind the scenes, Drapes. How do you deal with life on the road? Obviously, there's some things that, you know, you keep close to the vest, but do you watch a lot of shows? Do you go out a lot? I mean, there are things that you stream when you're spending a lot of time on the road. Like, what are you doing tonight?
So tonight I'll probably go out by myself, to be honest with you, grab some dinner. I'm not sure what everybody else is up to, but I'm doing this darn radio show. So, you know, I got to do this till 9 o'clock tonight, then walk around, and we're staying in Coconut Grove, a nice little area, upscale area, walk around, find something to eat, you know, watch some games on TV. What's interesting about life on the road, and this is an interesting trip, and I'm still trying to adjust. We didn't get to Miami till about 2:30. We didn't get to the hotel till about 3 o'clock. And then by the time you go to bed, it's 4 o'clock. And so you may have, you know, it's an off day in Miami. You may have plans to go out and golf or, you know, do whatever, but you're sleeping in till 10. And so, right. You know,
at least
half the day is pretty much over at least, you know, and so you're missing out on some sunshine, some daylight. You know, for me, I download a lot of shows. I got my book with me. You know, it's catching up on work, you know, really I'm a big explorer. So usually what I'll do is, I like to go out and just venture out and just walk and see what I see, you know, looking for shops, restaurants, you know, people watching. Mm-hmm. And it depends on, which city it is. Will I have friends there or not? Like, for instance, we go to Chicago this weekend, got some buddies I'm going to catch up with there. But it just depends on the city, man.
Yeah. So
and
you go
let
out.
Me tell you,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Miami, I'll tell you a quick story. So I used to love Miami. I mean, I still like Miami, but I used to love Miami, Whitey. I used to hit up South Beach all the time. And then this is a few years back before COVID. This is after I stopped drinking, which was in 2017. I went to South Beach, and I was there for like 15 minutes, and I just felt like I didn't belong. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it was alcohol everywhere, and it was partying and everything like that. So now I come to Miami. I'm like, all right, maybe I can get in some golf. Maybe I can get into a nice meal. But the Miami now, it's a different experience than what it was, you know, 7-8 years ago for me.
It's probably different now because you go out and you got Kings fans recognizing you everywhere, wherever you are. Dude, around I'm the country, you. Right?
And you, yeah, usually I got to take security with me too. And so it's tough sometimes,
I'm
man.
I'm sure
you know?
Get that some. I'm sure you're being modest, but I'm sure you get that
a little bit, you know. Yeah. Mostly at the games, people say hi and stuff like that. It feels good. I tell you, it's a different vibe now, though, than when I first started with the Kings. You know, my first 2 years, we were awful, 28 wins, 30 wins. You arrive in a city and nobody's there to greet you or anything. No fans in the building. On the road. But now, I mean, I can't tell you how many fans, you know, sport their Kings jerseys at on the road at the games. Come up, Drapes, Katie, we like you guys. We're so proud of our team, man. It, you know, you could walk around this city, the NBA, with your chest out, you know, puffed out because you work for the Sacramento Kings.
All right. You said sometimes you watch shows. Can I suggest a show for you? You may not.
Yeah, what you got?
Yeah. I just started watching this, and I'm mentioning this, A, because I like it, and B, I'm wondering if anybody else is watching it. True Detective Night Country with Jodie Foster. Ooh. It is weird. It's a very strange show, and I've only seen the first episode. I think they're up to like 5 or 6 now, but you haven't seen that one yet?
No, I haven't. Okay. I haven't seen all that. Right. I need to check anybody, that out. I got to put that on the list.
Yeah, I'd love to know what you think. But anyway, moving on here. Jason Kidd is coach of the Mavericks, of course. Here's what he has to say about Luka. We know Luka had 73, and then the Kings cooled him off a little bit, but Jason Kidd is just gushing about Luka. He says, quote, he's better than Dirk. He's in the atmosphere of MJ, the best to ever do it, LeBron, Kobe. And so just to appreciate what this young man's doing at the age of 24 is something that Dallas has never seen. I've said this internally. He's better than Dirk. He does things that Dirk could never do. Now is the opportunity of getting the right people around him to ultimately win a championship, end quote. What do you make of that?
What the heck is Jason Kidd
talking
about?
Thank
what,
you. Thank you.
Oh. My man can't even make it to the finals. Dirk is an MVP. He won a championship. You talk about some of the games where he used him and Jordan in the same sentence.
And they were teammates.
Luka, dude, Luka arguably is one of the most underachieving players in the NBA. Mm-hmm. He puts up stats and everything, but what has he done in the playoffs? Like last year, you get Kyrie and you miss the playoffs? Come on, man. It's a joke. Jason, you know, it's like Kendrick Perkins said earlier today. I think it was Perk or it might have been somebody else. If Jason Kidd wasn't Luka's coach, he wouldn't say that. He wouldn't have that opinion. Right. But he's sticking up for his guy and everything like that. I get it, but he's putting up some numbers. You talk about empty calories. You know, Luka is a stat stuffer, but it doesn't necessarily lead to wins.
No, I agree with you, and I think Luka, perhaps more than anybody else, there are a handful of guys playing now, and we know who they are. But he is benefiting and his legacy is benefiting from the fact that the game is more offensive minded than it's ever been. So what happens is you have a guy like Luka who puts up some big numbers, which is not easy to do. I know you got to be good to do that. Then you take those numbers out of context and compare him to like, oh, 73 points. You got to be one of the all time greats to do that.
Right.
And I think that's very misleading. I'll just say that.
Think about it like this, Whitey. And I think you mentioned this the other day. The Sacramento Kings had the best offense in NBA history, efficiency-wise. This year, how many more offense? Like 5 of them are ahead of where the Kings were last year.
Last I checked, it was 7, actually, the last
7,
time I checked.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, scoring is so easy. It's the easiest it's ever been in the NBA to get a bucket. Mm-hmm. And he scored 73. We saw that Atlanta Hawks defense. We know Atlanta's not a great defensive team. And so I just think there's – Luke is great. He's putting up numbers. He's a great player. What's missing from his resume, obviously an MVP, but also playoff success. Now, if he starts winning multiple championships,
yes,
then we can have that conversation. But right now, he's just a good player that puts up numbers.
It bothers me, and maybe it shouldn't. Maybe I'm way off here. But for Jason Kidd to say that about a guy that he won a championship with, like, oh, he's way better than Dirk. Well, Dirk was your guy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And if I'm Dirk, that's disrespectful, right?
Yeah.
If I'm Dirk, I'm sitting at home or out there. I'm like, what? Dude, I carried you to a title. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. And you know what? It's clickbait. It worked and everything. He's sticking up for his guy. I guarantee you, when Luka sees him, he's like, thanks, coach. Like, he's earning the trust of his star player. But come on. And Jason Kidd has played against the greats.
Uh-huh.
He's been around long enough to play against Jordan, Kobe, and all these guys. And for him to say that, come on, man.
Oh, well. Yeah. Again, coach speak taken to an extreme. But there you go. Like you say, there's a method to his madness. I just disagree. And I got to be honest. I know somebody called last week. I think it was it Will? Because they didn't like what I said about Luka. We talked about Luka and the whole cloud hanging over the Kings. And now mm-hmm. I think it's easier to say they're okay. They didn't draft him. They're okay. But I just think there's something about him that he's so ball dominant. He's a little overrated, as skilled as he is, because it's all about him. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, as you pointed out, his teams have never really won anything.
Yeah, and let me ask you, you know, when you look at his numbers, do you feel that they are empty calories, if you will? You know, do you feel like, sure, he's putting up the numbers, but they don't lead to wins?
I do to a degree, but I'll also say this, the other side of the coin. Again, I feel strongly about Luka that way, but a basketball guy that I respect as much as anybody I've ever talked to, you know, our buddy Jerry, who had his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Jerry Reynolds. And talking to him about Luka, he said, we were talking about this last year, I think, and he said, Luka reminds him of Oscar Robertson a lot, just the way he plays. So keep that in mind. I understand that.
Okay.
I just think he's a little, I just think he could trust his teammates a little more and be a little more about winning, playing defense, getting in the proper shape. I think he'd be a much better player, and I'd be much more willing to talk about him in terms of the all-time greats if I saw that from Luka.
100%. I agree. And, you know, we've had this discussion. Who's the ideal player to play alongside Luka that would lead to wins? Like, they haven't found a combination that work when you play with a guy like Luka. Mm-hmm. You mentioned ball dominance. He's second in the NBA in usage behind Joel Embiid. He shoots 24 times per game. I mean, 37.5%. He's very good. I don't want to take away from anything.
He
is a very good player, no doubt about that. But I just think, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I brought this up yesterday or the other day. Kings fans are like, man, we are so glad we didn't draft Luka. Like, they're okay with not drafting Luka now. And so I don't know, man. Jason Kidd, I know he's sticking up for his guy. That's his guy. But, you know, and also one of the things that bothers me about today's discussion about the NBA is we never talk about the defensive end, you know, and not Dirk wasn't a great defender. I'm not saying that, but when you talk about Jordan, when you talk about LeBron, you talk about Kobe, you know, they've had all defensive teams.
Mm-hmm.
Luka will never be on an all defensive team. And so, you know, as Jason Kidd, one of the best 2-way guards, he's forgetting the other end of the floor too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I do think, you know, going back over ground that we've all covered again and again and again, when the Kings had that decision to draft Luka, I believe, and I said this years ago, and some people said, oh, you're just being a Kings homer. It's like, I don't work for the Kings. I never have. But I still think you had to make a choice there between Fox and Luka. I don't think they really could necessarily play together, at least at that time. Could be wrong, but the Kings made their decision. I think they had to, at that point, I think they had to make that choice. And I think right now you could say, well, it worked out okay, other than, you know, they just should have picked a better player than who they picked. That's all, when they passed on Luka.
Right, right.
That's all.
And maybe it wasn't Luka, but it could have been somebody else.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Just get that pick right, whoever it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
When
you're
we
right.
come back, back to the Super Bowl, how this Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl is going to look a lot like the last one. And by the way, your thoughts on Luka, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. You okay now? Luka, the Kings didn't pick him. You all right with that? Or does it still keep you awake at night? It's the Drive Guys rolling on here on Sacktown Sports. Yeah, Kyle Draper's in Miami, and he's having a quiet evening. Sounds like, Jay, if I'm honest, it sounds to me like Kyle really is feeling kind of sorry for himself. Like, yeah, I'm doing a radio show with you guys, and G-Man and Katie and everybody, they're out having a good time in Miami. Doesn't it sound a little bit like that? Like Kyle's a little wishing he was out with his friends. Is that the case, Kyle?
A little bit, but then I remember, the hookup from our guys at Mercedes-Benz of Stockton. And I'm like, you know what, Drapes? It's okay. It's okay to be in the ballroom long as my guys at Mercedes-Benz of Stockton. Go check them out, Jay. Go check them out, Whitey. As long as they take care of your boy, I'm good.
All right. Good for you.
Sounds bad, but this is how my mind works. I'm like, all right, Clevelander partying with a bunch of people. Which is fake, it's not real, or having a nice, luxurious car. And so that was my decision, man. Yeah. You know what? It's the price we pay.
Good call. Good call. By the way, people, and I know you've seen this on the chat, people appreciate your Jimi Hendrix t-shirt, as do I.
Oh, thank you, my man. I've had this for a while. This is one of my favorite t-shirts here. Got it from Memphis, Tennessee, actually.
Yeah. Oh, really? It's very nice.
Yep. All yep. Right. You could only see the top here. Let me toggle down, if you will.
Uh-huh. Yeah. James Marshall.
Purple haze.
Yeah. I see. All right. So, in a way, that has kind of a Kings theme, even though I know he's a Seattle guy. All right. Yeah.
All right. Right.
Very nice.
Yeah. Doug Christie, I'm sure Doug Christie was a fan of him back in the day, or something like that. So, he's a Seattle guy. So. Yeah.
All right. 3-3.
One of my favorite shirts.
Yes. Yes. One of mine, too. One of my favorite shirts of yours. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We were just talking about Luka, and maybe Jason Kidd went a little overboard saying Luka's better than Dirk and as good as like MJ or Kobe. On the text line, someone says, asks, do the Mavericks have a random drug testing policy asking for a friend? Don't know about that, but I was wondering the same thing. But we have Shreska with us here on Sacktown Sports. Hello, Shreska. Thanks for listening. What can we do for you?
Hey, guys. My frustration with the whole Luka situation was stemming from who we ended up drafting.
Yeah.
And not from the fact that, we didn't really draft Luka. Now thinking back, they've had some flashy seasons. They had some, nice little ESPN highlights over there at Dallas. But you're right. They don't have a whole lot to show for. And, at the end of the day, I love the way the Kings are playing, sharing the ball. There's no ball hog, on our team. That's like just stat stuffing out there. And if Luka was here, I don't think we're going to have half the guys that we have on our roster. Just have Luka and a bunch of guys running around. So at the end of the day, I think it all worked out. I am disappointed that we didn't really do better with that second pick, though.
Yeah, that's a great point. I agree with you. Yeah. And I just think, Kyle, it's very significant here, not to pile on Luka, but, just that the Kings missed on him. Didn't draft him, and it looked like it was going to be a thing that would set the franchise back for perhaps a decade. And instead, here they are, and they're doing very well. And they pulled out of that, and that cloud is no longer overhead.
Not at all. And I go back to the one move Monty McNair made by making that trade for Domantas Sabonis, because ever since then, it's been Luka who. Not that Sabonis, and Luka are comparable or play the same position or anything, but Sabonis's impact on this team has turned us into a winner and a playoff contender. And I think, that's all we could hope for. As I look back on that 2018 draft, maybe you don't draft Luka, but what about Jaren Jackson Jr., next to pair with De'Aaron Fox, Wendell Carter Jr., a guy we talk about in trades right now. How about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Ooh. When you look at that draft, there were so many players that, the Kings could have taken. And let's keep it real. They just took the wrong one. And I maintain, too, Whitey, when you're a franchise like Sacramento, Charlotte, whatever it may be, not necessarily the glamour franchises that's fought. When you have a top five pick, top two pick, you got to get it right.
Yeah.
And fortunately, Monty McNair sort of cleaned up some mess, made some moves, and now we're on the right track. But it took us a while.
Yeah, and that's, I agree with you completely. At the time, there was a lot of talk that the Kings were very, very, very interested in Michael Porter Jr. And they kept visiting, and, you know, he had back problems that kept him out of commission for a while. Denver, you know, they were able to roll the dice on that and take him later. The Kings, it looked like, really wanted him, and then it came down to I still am not sure why they passed on Luka. Was it because they felt it was either Fox or Luka? Was it because Vlade didn't get along with his dad? I've heard that. I have no idea. Maybe they just thought, Marvin Bagley is, hey, we've got guards. Well, we just need a forward here. I don't know. But it's remarkable that at this point you can look back at that and go, yeah, you know what? They're still in really good shape.
Yeah. You know, those are things that sometimes teams don't recover from, you know, and they have, and sooner rather than later, quicker than I expected, because that was all the talk when I first got here. Oh, Marvin Bagley. And then you had his dad stuff and everything, the social media stuff. It was a bad situation for him in Sacramento and for Kings fans in Sacramento with him. And as Luka ascended, it was a constant reminder, like, darn, we missed the boat on that one. We should have drafted him. But now, you know what? You're good to go. You know, it's in the past. Like, the Kings finished ahead of Luka and them last year. Mm-hmm. I think they'll do it again this year. So if you're a Kings fan, you're good right now.
Yeah. And so Keegan Murray, great draft pick. Halliburton, I know that's difficult still in a lot of ways, but you get Sabonis for him. Davion playing well. They've drafted extremely well. And they ended up, and I'm not saying, oh, it was fine, but you ended up getting a useful player still for Bagley anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. We got our guy Trey Lyles.
There you go.
In that Bagley deal. And, you know, our boy Trey Lyles, if you had us to do it all over again, would you take Trey or Bagley? It's a no-brainer, right? And so, you know what's interesting? I follow a couple of guys out there in Washington, and they were like, and they tweeted out, ever since Marvin Bagley came, you know, our offensive rating has been this. And it's like, they're looking at Marvin Bagley as a guy that's going to help turn them around. And so it didn't work in Sacramento. It didn't work in Detroit. But, you know, one man's trash might be another man's treasure in this case.
I hope so. I mean, I tend to not root against guys. You know, it would be nice to see if Marvin Bagley were able to find whatever it is he couldn't find when he was here. I think we can all agree on that, right? Good for him. Good for the league. It's just maybe he learned some things here from the rough time. It just seemed like he felt entitled here from the moment he got here, and Dave Yeager wasn't having any of that.
Yeah, and I don't think his dad and family did him any favors, right? He seems to be a good kid. Like, I thought his heart was in the right place, at least in my dealings with him. To me, it was never about, you know, anything he said or did, in my opinion. It was always about, well, after the game, his dad tweeted out this. Or after the game, somebody in his camp says this. You need to play my guy. He's unhappy. Trade him. Get him out of here. And then, you know, for him, it's, you know, he'd always would be the player that the Kings drafted instead of Luka. And trying to outlive that and try to overcome that, it was just too much for him to handle.
Mm-hmm. It's possible that the Kings made that decision for good reasons. I've gotten into real bitter arguments with people about this over Twitter. Just this notion that, hey, you really couldn't have Fox and Luka on your team. Their styles wouldn't mesh. And I've had people tell me it's idiotic. You got to take the best player. And I understand that, but I do think if that was the reason why they didn't pick him, it does make some sense. And it turns out, you know, they got a guy who's third team all league and still improving. So maybe Vlade actually got it right. I know that seems like a stretch at this point, but it's worked out okay to this point anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, I will say on that, look at what Atlanta did also, you know.
Yeah.
They drafted Luka and then traded him, you know, had to swap.
Yeah.
And you know, you get Trae Young, you get who was the other guy? DeAndre Hunter, I think it might have been, or somebody like that. Mm-hmm. No, it might have been Cam Reddish. I can't remember who it was. And you're thinking, okay, it looks nice. And, you know, you could argue Atlanta made a mistake as well. But I remember when Luka was coming out, and a guy I work with in Boston, Max Letterman, you know, this is before the draft. This is a couple of months before the draft. And he's like, Kyle, this guy Luka Doncic, you know, he's only a kid, but they're comparing him to LeBron James. They say he's the second coming of LeBron James. And so he was in on it. He knew how good Luka could be. And so I think, you know, when you talk it, and I agree with you, maybe he couldn't play with De'Aaron Fox, but man, it'd be like, what if Jordan was available? Are you not taking Jordan because you got Clyde Drexler on your team? No, I mean, and you figure it out. You get the, and that's the thing I think about Sacramento too. They were at a point where you just needed talent. Get the talent in and then figure out from that point on. Look at Monty McNair's drafts. You already had De'Aaron Fox. Then you draft Tyrese Halliburton. You draft Davion Mitchell. Those are all point guards, if I'm correct. You get the talent, and then you figure it out. Maybe you could make a trade at some point,
right?
You know, and which Monty ultimately did. And so I think it worked out for Sacramento, and I applaud Monty, you know, because we'd still be talking about Luka and Marvin Bagley if Monty didn't work his magic and turn this thing around.
Yeah, totally agree. By the way, speaking of the Hawks, I don't know whether you saw this. You probably did. Apparently, Coach Snyder there in Atlanta, he didn't want to trade DeJounte Murray. And I know you and I were both really high on that idea. And there's a lot of talk of him maybe moving to the Lakers. And there's been talk that he's not a good fit with Trey, as we're talking about guards fitting together. But DeJounte Murray's having a really good year. He's a good defender. Yeah. And, yeah, their coach says, I don't want to trade him. So I think from where I am, I think the smart thing for them would be to hang on to DeJounte Murray.
I agree. Like, when you – you know, are looking at, you know, pairing somebody with Trey or which work, he's not the issue. That he's not the problem. Maybe you look at trading Trey Young, as great as Trey Young is, putting up numbers 27 and 11. Talk about empty calories. Those numbers have not equated to wins. And so I don't think DeJounte Murray is the problem there. And I actually think, you know, I actually like the backcourt, but Trey has some shortcomings, obviously, on a defensive end. I think he has some shortcomings when it comes to leadership as well. And so those are the issues they need to fix, not DeJounte Murray.
Meanwhile, this road trip is coming along nicely, where the Kings go from here and where they appear to be heading in the standings next when the Drive guys roll on. Sacktown Sports.